Welcome to A Cult of Personality, esoteric podcast extraordinaire at occultofpersonality.net. I'm your host, Greg Kaminsky. A Cult of Personality podcast is available on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher Radio, Acast, TuneIn, and all the best podcast apps. This is episode 177, featuring an interview with paranormal researcher Katie Montana Jordan. A Cult of Personality podcast is made possible by you, the listeners, and by the subscribers to the A Cult of Personality membership section, and our patrons who participate via the A Cult of Personality Patreon campaign. I also want to thank Marcus, Michael, and Naji for your generous donations to support the show. And let me remind you that although you're able to listen to this podcast at no charge, the costs to produce it are significant. Your contributions ensure the continuity of the show. Support A Cult of Personality podcast by joining the membership section, donating via the donate button on the website, or via Patreon at patreon.com/occultofpersonality. And if you're already supporting the show or have done so in the past, my heartfelt thanks, and I salute you. Now, before I introduce this episode of the podcast, I want to take a moment for a different sort of introduction. A Cult of Personality podcast has been ongoing for 11 years. This past summer, I became ill, and managing the podcast grew increasingly more difficult. It was at this point that a longtime listener and supporter of the show stepped forward and asked to help, and I couldn't be more grateful for his assistance, and he's now the new co-host of the podcast. It is my great honor and pleasure to introduce Rudolf Berger. Rudolf Berger has been interested in the world of occultism and esotericism for almost three decades. A Freemason for 24 years, and also a member of the Scottish Rite, his first interest in esoteric sciences came about when he read books by Rudolf Steiner. Later, after experiences with shamanism, theosophy, and ritual magic, he broadened his knowledge and personal involvement to many fields of the Western tradition. Today he calls himself a Gnostic Hermeticist, with a very strong link to ceremonial magic. Fields of special interest are also sacred geometry and the implication of sound and music in the occult arts. He is mostly working the art as a solitary practitioner, but maintains links to several occult groups. Rudolf lives in Austria, close to its capital, Vienna, working in the performing arts world. You can contact him at info@thothermes.com, and I'll have Rudolf's email link in the show notes. So I want to give a very warm welcome to our new co-host, Rudolf Berger. Now, in episode number 177, an interview with Katie Montana Jordan. Katie Montana Jordan has been formally investigating with various psychic and paranormal organizations for over 20 years. She is a published freelance writer with areas of specialty in holistic healing, paganism, witchcraft, and the occult. Katie is writing consultant and field researcher to paranormal research and investigations, as well as occult specialist and independent consultant to San Diego Paranormal Research Society, and occult specialist and independent consultant to Scottish Ghost Adventures. Katie is also co-host and occult scholar to the What Are You Afraid Of podcast. In addition to taking on investigative casework, she holds lectures and teaches classes on occult-related topics. K- Katie maintains that because ghosts are earthbound energies, the whole of the paranormal and parapsychological fields are subtopic to the studies of theology and spirituality. Both an ordained minister and pagan priestess, she is currently obtaining her PhD in holistic theology. Katie Montana Jordan, I want to welcome you to a Cult of Personality podcast. It's great to speak with you.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm extremely honored to be here.
Well, thank you. It's our pleasure. And I've been looking forward to speaking with you for some time. I've been following your work on social media and various places. And maybe for people who aren't already familiar with you, and you could give them a brief bio, a little background.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. My name is Katie Montana Jordan. I'm a freelance writer, and I'm also an occult specialist and a paranormal researcher and an independent consultant. I am a writing consultant and field researcher for an organization based out of Silverdale, Washington, called Paranormal Research and Investigations. And I'm also an independent consultant for Scottish Ghost Adventures based out of Scotland.
Excellent. You've got quite a lot on your plate.
I'm a busy girl, but I love it. I'm very fortunate.
That's great. Maybe you could give us a little bit of an indication about how you became interested in these subjects. I have a feeling it goes back to your early days.
Yeah, it certainly does. From what I can remember, one of my first actual occult-related or paranormal experiences happened when I was little, and I don't really remember how old I was. I want to say it was probably around six, but I was basically harassed by a malevolent spirit in the house that I grew up in, and I would see it often, and I don't remember honestly how frequently or how long it lasted. I don't remember if this being appeared to me for years at a time or how sporadic it was. I just remember that it was there and that it came and went. And it came and went actually so often that I started to develop less of a fear for it and more of an interest in it. I don't know if my experience is what actually led me onto the path that I'm on now as a pagan and a practicing occultist and a paranormal researcher. I don't know how faithful it was or how happenstance it was, but it was definitely one of those things that shaped me in my entire worldview of spirituality. And as I continue to work as a writer and as an occultist and a paranormal researcher and trying to answer these questions for my clients about what might be out there, about what might actually be the other world and what that consists of, I'm trying to answer those questions for myself first and foremost. And that starts with my first experience that I had when I was little, when I saw that entity.
Do you have any desire to kind of describe it a little bit more for us?
Absolutely. It was black in color and it floated. So it was almost like a black mist. I couldn't touch it though, but it looked like it was formed. So when it manifested, it wasn't translucent. I couldn't see through it, but it was still misty. And it almost looked like it had a hood on so that I couldn't see his face. And it had outstretched arms or almost wings. And it floated and flew around my house. And I do remember that I remember the first couple times I saw it, I was terrified. You know, I'm definitely the black sheep of my family. I didn't have any knowledge, any history with anything occult related, anything ghostly at this point when I was little. And I do remember one of the first times that I saw it, that I opened up my mouth to scream and nothing came out. And looking back now, I have to, as a legitimate paranormal researcher, I have to question everything. I have to maintain a healthy sense of skepticism even towards myself. So I sit down and I correlate all that and I wonder, well, how much of this was real? And again, what does reality mean for me? Because different terms mean different things to different people. And, you know, was I dreaming or was I not dreaming? But even if I was dreaming, you know, what we see in our dream state is just as relevant as what we see in our waking state. So again, I'm just trying to figure out what it was, if it's still present now as an adult. And I think it is, or I think something similar to it is. So So I do remember that it was black and it was terrifying. And I think we learned to coexist with each other and it just became a part of my life.
Wow, that is really, really interesting.
That is interesting. May I ask something additional? It's not out of curiosity, Katie. It's because I personally have no experience with that kind of experiences, as probably many of our listeners might not. It was two things that you said that gave me those questions. One was you had no memory of how long, in how many years, how much time in your life you were harassed by that being. So I wondered how you could describe a bit more why you didn't have a feeling of that time. And secondly, I don't know if that was on purpose, you call it him. You always were saying he. Is there any specific reason to that?
Those are both excellent questions. I'll answer the second one first. I felt that it was of a male nature, and I don't know why, but it definitely didn't feel feminine at all. So what characteristics and what traits I was able to pick up from it, one of them was definitely male. And of course, at first, the first couple of encounters that I had with it, I didn't know any better. I was scared, you know, something big and black. And of course, you know, we're taught to think that things that are black or things that are dark are bad or evil, and they're not. Mm-hmm. I know that now. But at the time, you know, this was very new and I didn't have anybody to talk to about it. I certainly didn't want to talk to anybody about it because, you know, I thought I was crazy. I thought something was wrong with me. I didn't want to go to my mom and have her be concerned. So I started this journey by myself. And it's only been within these last few years that I've learned to be more vocal about it. And I think it is important for people to be vocal about it. I think that people need to realize that we all have similar encounters, and not necessarily as similar as my encounter, but that we all have some level of paranormal and parapsychological encounters, and that it is normal and that it is good, and that it is okay to talk about. So to answer your other question, so Rudolph, are you asking me why I don't remember the duration?
Exactly. How could you describe that feeling or not feeling the time?
That's a good question. I don't know if I can, actually. There's something else about me, and this is something that only a few people close to me know about me, and everybody's going to know about it now. I actually have a really bad memory. I have I don't know if it's an actual legitimate problem. I was never in, as far as I know, I was never in an accident. As far as I know, I never suffered a major trauma. But for some reason, even with my childhood, and I talk to my mother about this all the time, I can't seem to recall certain things that seem normal for most people. And so I feel like there are large chunks of my childhood in my life that I can't seem to recall. And as a paranormal researcher, we are starting to see in our field that parapsychology is much more relevant than we thought it was. So our paranormal research these days is almost more turning into parapsychological research. And from that perspective, I have to wonder, you know, how much of my loss of memory plays into my encounter and what does that mean? And it certainly doesn't mean that what I can remember or what I do remember feeling is invalidated, but that's just another big question that needs to be answered.
Okay, yeah.
Boy, this is really fascinating. I didn't mean to go so deep so quickly, but what you're talking about is really interesting. The way you said the paranormal research is kind of turning into parapsychological research, and I feel like as a esotericist, this is, I don't know if it's symbolic or symptomatic of this idea that these constructs that we have of outer and inner, or in my mind versus in the world, that these constructs are much more fluid than they would at first seem to be, and that's what it sounds like you're saying to me.
Absolutely. And that's what's so exciting about being involved in the field of paranormal research right now, that we are working towards obviously furthering the field of and the knowledge of and the education and the awareness of. But we are finding that we are limited if we stick with one area of academia. So that's where occultism comes into play within my work as a paranormal researcher, that the occultists will look at science and say, that's not enough. You know, science, you're awesome and you answer a lot of questions, but you're limited. You're not able to answer all of my questions. The occultist is forced to look deeper and wants those bigger questions better answered. And it's the same with religion or different faiths and different belief systems. The occultist looks at everything from a bigger picture and says, science doesn't answer all the questions. Philosophy doesn't answer all the questions. Metaphysics specifically doesn't answer all the questions. And that's where occultism plays such a huge role. And that's where occultism is so relevant today within religion and science and faith, but specifically in my line of work as a writer and as a researcher, we are forced to stop and dissect everything, that science is limited to certain areas. So occultism is basically where, quite literally, where science and philosophy meet.
Now, I'm curious, did you become interested in the paranormal research first, or did you become interested in occultism first, and how that happened?
I think it was probably all the same. I think it's all relative. I think in my mind, it's all the same, honestly. Mm-hmm. I was always interested in the field of the paranormal and learning more about ghosts and dream work. I always had vivid dreams, even as a little girl. I still have them now. I'm still trying to figure out what those are about. And I don't know if it started with seeing that black entity or if that's just my first major memory or if that was just my first major emotional impression that I got as a child within that area. But it seems like along the way, even as a little girl, I had these encounters. And these things happened to me. And I was always in this situation that just seemed a little odd, that nobody else seemed to understand, that nobody else could seem to see. And I had to figure out how to navigate that for myself. And that brought me to where I am now. And that's what's so exciting about parapsychology. We were just talking about how paranormal research is turning more or less into this dominated parapsychological research. And parapsychology is the scientific study of the relationship of living organisms and the outside world. So it's basically the areas that transcend the physical laws of nature. And again, that's where occultism comes into play. It's able to better answer these questions that science can't answer or that religion can't answer. I'm a huge advocate in the field of paranormal research to better marry scientific investigative skills and psychical investigative skills. And for me, that is found within occultism.
Oh, brilliant.
I find that's a very interesting link you're making there between putting somehow occultism in the middle between science and religion, if I get you correctly. Mm-hmm. Did you have experiences of that kind also beyond the paranormal, parapsychological field, or is it specific to that area for you?
That's a good question. That's where I love talking about my work. And that's also where it's difficult for me to talk about my work, to find those personal boundaries, because 99% of my work makes up my personal life. So when I have an encounter or when I have an opinion or a statement that I'm making, everything is pretty much just as personal as it is professional. I was always interested in paganism as well. And of course, as I got older and started to study more on the paranormal field and, you know, as a little girl grabbing books about ghost stories and reading up on the greats like, you know, Lloyd or Auerbach, for example, starting to understand that, okay, so if there is another world, where is it and how are we connected to that world? And that's where the study of metaphysics is so fascinating. That's a direct correlation that man has with his environment and the relationship that he chooses to have with creation around him and if there's a creator of that creation or not. So I started to correlate that in my mind to theology and philosophy. And if there is an afterlife, where is it and why is this happening? And I'm continuing, obviously, to find more answers, but paganism and occultism and the darker side of that academia is what always spoke the loudest to me.
Interesting.
So, Katie, I'm really curious about how your areas of interest all meld, because working in the paranormal research and then being a pagan priestess and then also sort of coming at this from an academic angle, you are working in realms that kind of all have their own way of viewing these things, but you're trying, I guess, to transcend them to have a more holistic approach, which I think is admirable.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I recognize that there are probably not a lot of people out there that necessarily do what I do. And that's another reason why I just said a couple minutes ago that I've been learning to be more vocal about it, because I have found that the more I talk about this subject, that other people talk about it. And I think that that's healthy. I think there always needs to be an open academic dialogue about the what's and the ifs of what's going on around us. I am a pagan priestess, and I'm also an ordained minister. And I can remember I was doing a radio spot a while back. I think it was maybe a year or so ago. And I had this lady, it was live, this lady called in, and she was really upset that I was both a ordained minister as well as a pagan priestess. And she had a hard time wrapping her head around that. You know, how could I be both? I have to be one or the other. The point is that I went to a school for theology and philosophy. And it's not just enough to have a belief system and to choose to not subscribe to an institutionalized religion and to say, okay, this is it for me. This is how I feel. I don't feel like that's good enough. And I don't feel like that's good enough for me as an academic, but I think that it's important for people to understand the history of their faith system and the history of their religion. And that right there is paganism. Paganism is biblical history. Paganism is a history of every major branch of religion. And that's where paganism is relevant. And it's important because it's still applicable to absolutely everything every day in every faith and in every area of the world. Yet people have this preconceived notion that paganism is something that it's not. So I look at everything from a theological point of view. That's just the way my mind works. And because philosophy is a handmaiden to theology, in my mind, I can relate things theologically to what the metaphysical answer might be behind something. And I correlate that with, because I tend to steer more towards things that are considered darker or occultic. When I became an official paranormal researcher, more or less official, I started to realize that there was this huge hole in the field, at least out here in the Pacific Northwest, because I'm based out of Portland, Oregon here. There was this huge hole in paranormal academia about the darker side of things. And again, to be clear, just because something is black or dark, it doesn't mean that it's bad. It doesn't mean that it's evil. It just means that there still needs to be some studies done on it. There still needs to be some education done on it. I took on the title of a cult specialist within the organizations that I work with and that I represent. And from there, it just started to grow. People were asking more questions about things that they apparently were scared to ask about before. And that would be anything from using occult-related tools like tarot cards or a Ouija board to talking more specifically about what demonology is and what it isn't. So it's a huge picture. It's a huge umbrella term.
All right. I'm curious to hear from you. As you said, we're also consulting a Scottish company. As you know, I'm based in Europe. And
yeah.
I wonder if there are specific differences that you can feel between the way Americans approach your work or the questions behind your work and Europeans. Do you feel a difference, or is it very similar the way you are approached, the way your work is being handled, and the way you work yourself?
Rudolph, that is an excellent question. That's an educated question. I'm actually glad you asked me that. I don't think anybody has asked me that before. This will be a two-part answer. Number one is, yes, I work with this amazing organization called Scottish Ghost Adventures, and they are based out of Scotland. And to be clear, Scottish Ghost Adventures has no affiliation with Ghost Adventures based out of the States here. But there is a correlation between differences that we see here in the States versus, let's say, Scotland, for example. The organizations that I work with here in Portland and in Washington and the Pacific Northwest, we take on actual casework. So we have people contact us that firmly believe that they are having a paranormal activity in their house, and we will go and meet with them. And if we feel that their situation warrants a full-scale investigation, then we go forth with that. And then we do our best to collect any evidence and figure it out from there. But that isn't so common in Europe, and that's not so common in Scotland. So even though we are learning to be better about discussing topics that are considered taboo, specifically paganism and occultism, we're starting to talk about those things more here in the States, which is fabulous. These topics are less discussed in Europe, specifically in Scotland. I hope that I can make a positive difference in that. Again, just opening up a more academic and a more accurate dialogue about what something is and what something isn't. Part two of my answer is I met this gentleman named Gert Brouwer from the Netherlands. He was actually at a big work event that we had over Samhain weekend, over Halloween weekend. It's a conference in Port Gamble, Washington. And we sat down and we were discussing the differences between demonology, according to how we view it in the States and how it's viewed in the Netherlands. And it's definitely different. There are a lot of differences. And of course, everything is going to be looked upon differently because of regional dialect and the personal religions or the faith system behind those areas and those cultures. But even demonology, it's looked at so differently. And I have always have had a hard time wrapping my head around that. Again, I can't call myself a theologian yet because I don't have my PhD yet. But as an aspiring theologian, demonology is an important area of academic study. But it's a dangerous area to study if you're looking at it from a religious specified point of view. It's certainly not dangerous in the terms that, you know, demons are real and they're, you know, going to come attack you. But every area of theology and every area of paranormal and parapsychological research and occultism and paganism, every area is relevant. Every area needs to be discussed.
Got you.
Katie, I'm curious if you've ever had any personal experience with possession or exorcism or even a situation where maybe you performed an exorcism.
I actually have not performed an exorcism. I don't really know how I feel about that. If somebody came up to me and said, I need an exorcism, that is going to consist of so many questions. I'm going to need a huge background. I'm going to need a lot of information before I get involved in that. So my issue with exorcisms is going to be related to what I was just talking about, demonology and therefore exorcism being religious specified. People look at that topic, paranormal and parapsychological study, with the views of their upbringing. So people are going to look at it with a certain opinion. You know, some people are going to look at it from a more religious point of view, and then they're going to correlate that, you know, with the word demon and the word exorcism. These terminologies are more or less Christian based. So you're already invoking an emotional reaction out of people. And that's not what you want when you're going into somebody's home and you're conducting an actual, thorough, legitimate investigation. So we need to go into these situations being open-minded and being unbiased. And at that point, it doesn't matter what I believe in. It only matters that I am able to hopefully offer solutions and answer questions to somebody in need. I hear about them constantly, but to be honest with you, I have not seen them. And I think that's because, not to say that maybe demons or demonic possession doesn't actually, you know, that this doesn't exist, that they don't actually happen. But again, that is going to depend on that person's background and what that person believes. So I would have a problem performing an exorcism because even though I'm an ordained minister, I'm also a pagan priestess. So I'm obviously not church-based. I choose not to have an affiliation with an actual institutionalized religion. So for somebody to ask me to perform an exorcism, it's not going to be the typical, you know, modern day Catholic-based exorcism that everybody imagines when that word is spoken. So I have done work in the past where I would not necessarily help a spirit crossover because I have an issue with that too. I don't think that we have the capability or even the permission to do that. I think that spirits and energies and psyches and ghosts or whatever you want to call them, I think they're a little bit more free-willed than we think they are. I do believe in the darker side of things, but again, that doesn't mean that they're bad. So the whole idea of demonology, that's going to mean something different to everybody.
This is just really interesting. I'm tempted to ask you, it sounds like part of it is that the individual who's being affected, their upbringing, their worldview, their belief system is going to and be informing the situation to such a degree that it may influence it so much. Like, if the person was raised Roman Catholic, they're maybe, it sounds like, more apt to buy into a scenario that resembles classic possession that they've been brought up with, whereas someone
exactly
who is raised as an atheist might see it as a more of a psychological condition or something along those lines.
Exactly. And, you know, who's to say what area is going to be more correct or incorrect? It doesn't really matter, but it's about being open-minded and walking into a situation and, like I said, making sure that, you know, I'm able to best meet my client's needs, whether I'm working as an independent consultant or going in with an actual team. The danger is going into a situation with a preconceived notion. And those are actually clients that we find difficult to work with, because not necessarily that they're difficult to please, but, like, for example, I cannot tell you how often we get phone calls and emails from people, specifically homeowners, saying that they have activity in their house and they're already convinced that it's a demon. They're already convinced that it's something bad. So we go in and we try to talk them through this and figure out how to best meet their needs. But if they already have this idea in their head that it's something bad, that it's something demonic, then why did they even call us? Then we can't help you. So it's about always being open-minded and, in my opinion, being non-dogmatic when you're looking at possible paranormal encounters. Because let's say that I am a Catholic and I look at something with my Catholic background, that's wonderful. But if there is an entity or a spirit or an extra energy in my house, who's to say that they're Catholic? So who's to say that if I bring somebody in to perform an exorcism and, you know, use the name and the power of Christ to expel the spirit or the demon from the home, that entity is even going to respond to that, or that the entity is even going to know what I'm talking about? So again, it's not just about, you know, the homeowners, about their point of view or the researcher's point of view. There are so many different facets that need to be covered.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you are almost representing the spirit point of view, because maybe in the past, the religious authorities seemed like they were representing the human point of view. Like, we're going to do whatever we need to the spirit so that we're comfortable. Mm-hmm. Whereas it sounds like your approach is much more like, we must respect these entities. It sounds like you're representing a position that's like, we don't have the right to expel them from a space. Like, mm-hmm. we don't own a structure that they may inhabit in the same way. So we don't have the prerogative to act that way.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's very egotistical of us to go into a situation with that point of view. And that's what's so beautiful about the study and the practice of paganism, that pagans believe that the other world and our world are always in constant communication with each other. And we apply that and we correlate that by different, you know, with different routes and different methods. Some people call that magic. Some people look at that from actual paranormal research. Some people look at that from working within alchemy or occultism. And that's what's so wonderful and open and vague about paganism and occultism, that they are so broadly based and loosely based that they're individual spiritual journeys. And so self-pursuit and self-movement and developing the abilities within yourself, within your own capabilities in your own body and your own parapsychological powers, those are all correlated within paganism. The communication that we are seeing and the existence that we are seeing within the different dimensions, you know, whether you want to call that the spirit realm or the ghostly realm, scientists have proven that there are other realms, and scientists have proven that we are all made up of energy. And it's also been scientifically proven that energy cannot be destroyed. It only is altered and transferred. So that means that when we die, when we shed our physical bodies, that we don't actually die. We don't actually see blackness, that something else happens. We're just trying to figure out what that is. But looking at it from a academic point of view, from a theological point of view, not looking at it from a religious point of view, saying, oh, when I die, my soul's going to go somewhere. My soul's going to go to heaven. We're not even sure if it is a soul. And, you know, of course, nobody knows if heaven actually exists or not. It's about looking at it from a scientific meets, you know, occultic meets parapsychological point of view to incorporate all of these belief systems and to find that commonality. And I think that for me, that is found within practicing occultism and using these different tenets of communication and these different occult tools. And one of them that I use often is a Ouija board.
What fascinates me, Katie, at what you're saying is, as opposed to many people in the occult, in the esoteric fields, we always tend to compartmentalize things, you know, to this is esotericism, this is occultism, this is the paranormal. Well, we know about each other and we kind of get the feeling of the other, but we often do not really mix up, right? And you, what I like about what you're saying, it gives me the impression that you see that all as a holistic thing. Everything is part of the same entity and it all works together. Do I get you right there?
Absolutely. That is exactly right. That there's this notion of solidarity, that we are all connected, that we are all important, and that we all need to be revered, that everything and everybody and all of the situations and past, present, future, everything matters. And of course, not looking at that from a religious point of view, and not even necessarily from a pagan point of view or from a theological point of view, but from a very humanistic perspective, we are here. We're here. So why not be here within a moment? Why not dig in deeper and answer these questions? And again, you know, science is wonderful, but science is limited, and philosophy is wonderful, but philosophy is limited. And we're finding more as we are actively working within the paranormal field that science and philosophy, that science and theology, that these areas of academic study have to be better married, that we have to work together, and that it's not good enough for one area of study to say, oh, we're better, you know, we have data-controlled experiments and these are the answers, but there are still answers. There are still holes to those answers, and it's the same with philosophy. So my stance on it is that as a paranormal researcher, we are first and foremost trying to prove or disprove the existence of an afterlife, right? Mm-hmm. And we can't just look at it from a scientific point of view because the afterlife isn't necessarily perfectly scientific, that there is some sort of philosophy involved, that there is some metaphysics involved. And that's where occultism and parapsychology come into play. It's putting all of those little pieces together and being able to answer all of those questions from a more global point of view, from a non-religious point of view.
Mm-hmm. A very down-to-earth question, because I assume that many of our listeners don't have much experience with that. So let's say you get a phone call from somebody who owns a house and they have the impression that an entity, that there's something in their house which makes them call you and the company. So what do you actually do, just practically, how is this happening? And what's the result in the end for the house, for the owner, for you, and for the entity when you have acted?
Essentially, I always try to get in touch with everybody that contacts me. And of course, that's extremely time consuming, but I think it's important. And whether or not I already have an educated guess as to, you know, oh, I think this person probably isn't experiencing anything paranormal, that's not to say that it might not necessarily be supernatural. For example, we are seeing a lot more cases where there is a self-manifested poltergeist, not necessarily the traditional view of a poltergeist, but extra energy that's in the house that was manifested by the person that lives there, unbeknownst to them, that is becoming more common than we realize. So I don't know if it's something that's happening more, or if we're just starting to look at it from a more global perspective, so we're able to better recognize it as researchers. If somebody is experiencing, for example, a self-manifested poltergeist in their house, or let's say their office within their work environment, someplace that's close and intimate to them, that's not necessarily paranormal, but it is supernatural. It is parapsychological. So the different fields are all related and they all interlap with each other. If I have a client that calls me, it's my job to listen and validate. Is a lot of times people just want to be heard. People just want to know that they're not alone and that they're not crazy. And it doesn't matter if I think they're crazy because I haven't walked their shoes. And I can imagine how I sound talking to people about the experiences that I've had. And, you know, the entity that harassed me when I was little, I'm fully aware of the fact of, you know, how I must sound to certain people. And honestly, I don't really care because it's my path and these things are happening to me and I want to make my own choices and live my own life. And so I remember that when I'm listening to somebody on the other end of my phone that might be very upset about something that they firmly believe is happening in their house. So it doesn't matter what I believe at that point, it matters what they believe. And I need to do my best to answer their questions and offer solutions for them. And whether the solution would be to coexist with the energy that's in the house, or if they feel very strongly that the energy is bad and they want it out, then we will see if that's something that we are able to do for them or not. So essentially what we do is I take information. And then if we feel that that person and their situation warrants a meet and greet, then I'll set up, it's basically a client interview, a witness interview process where we go in and meet the person and, you know, just sit down and talk to them. And it's very informal and just feel them out. You know, and at that point, we're looking for any red flags, like very obvious red flags. Like if we think this person is showing actual signs of mental illness or alcoholism or drug use, you know, anything like that. So we do a walk around of the property and we feel it out and we start documenting right away just to be as well-rounded as we can and bring in cameras and bring in some equipment and start taking pictures just to get the ball rolling with documentation. And then if we feel at that point that there might actually be something within the confines of the house or structured around that particular person, then the next step in the process is to do a full-scale investigation, in which case we will bring in all of our equipment, bring in as many people as we feel we need, and it's usually always by the request of the client. Some clients absolutely don't want, let's say, a psychic involved. Some clients absolutely say, we want a psychic, you know, bring in a psychic. You know, we understand that you've got your equipment. We want you to document things scientifically and technologically, but we also want you to bring in a psychic, or we also want you to bring in a shaman. So again, it's just whatever the client needs, whatever the client feels that they need for their space, for their living space and for their home. And so we're there for however amount of time we're able to be there, for hours and hours and hours on end typically. And then if we have to go back a second or a third time, if we're able to, that's always wonderful. At the end of our investigation process, we take all of our data and that we've collected and we go over it 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 again and again and again. And then we have out here in the Pacific Northwest, we're very fortunate to have a vast resource of colleagues and friends within our field that are brilliant and very educated and very well-versed in what they do. So if we even come up with something that we feel warrants more study, or if we have a question that we feel could be better answered by somebody else, we seek the help from our independent consultants. And I'm an independent consultant as well. So again, it's looking at things from a scientific and a philosophical point of view. All of these areas need to be better married. So everybody needs to work together. Everybody needs to share data for the field of paranormal research. And that's not something that you see all the time. So it's something that I think is very honorable that I see my colleagues doing here in the Pacific Northwest. So long story short, if we are sitting down and going through all of our data and data review, very often will take months and months and months and months and months. Then if we find something, then we will go to the client with that and we'll sit down and talk to them and give them our professional opinion. You know, yes, we feel very strongly that there is something going on in the house. We cannot for sure say if it's paranormal or, yeah, I feel like it is paranormal and this is why. Look at what we found on the camera. What do you think about this? And then it's up to the client at that point. The client might say, oh, well, I didn't realize it. That voice on the tape that you caught, the EVP, that sounds like my dead grandma. Okay, now I'm not scared anymore. She can stay. Awesome. Or somebody would say, you know, I didn't like what I saw on this video, or I didn't like what you picked up and I feel unsafe and now it needs to be extracted, at which point we will deal with it then.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Katie, you've been very busy giving presentations and speaking at a lot of different events. And before we get too much further into the interview, I was wondering if you might talk about some of your upcoming appearances and presentations that you have.
Yes, thank you for asking about that. So the next big conference that we have coming up is at the end of March. It's March 31st through April 2nd. It is our annual Oregon Ghost Conference, and information about that can be found at www.oregonghostconference.com. And I will most likely be lecturing like I always do. And I'm finalizing my lecture topic right now. So all of that information is going to be finalized and detailed and released here within the next few weeks. But as an occult specialist, I always keep my lectures occult related. So I'll definitely keep up with my occult motif with that. I have a few lecture ideas brewing in my head, but I'm definitely going to be teaching my class on Ouija boards. And that's something that I have the most fun with, and I am so proud of my patrons that come to my class. I have, you know, half the people that come are legitimately terrified of the boards, and they're terrified of me, but they come and they're there. And I have people that sit in the corner and they don't want to touch the board, or, you know, they want to sit on the other side of the door, but they just want to listen. So I'm proud for people that have fears of these occult tools, or perhaps they feel that they had a negative experience with the Ouija board when they were little, which is very common, being able to talk to them about that and hopefully dispel, you know, the myth behind the Ouija board, you know, that it's not bad, that it's not evil, and it's certainly not a demonic portal, and sit down and talk to that person and dispel these myths for them and dispel their fears for them. The first couple of times I taught my class, I was looking at the Ouija board as a paranormal tool for a possible communication with the spirit world, right? So we're using the Ouija board as a paranormal tool to communicate with outside stimuli. But again, the more we are actively researching within the field, and the more I encounter both personally and professionally, I am coming to realize that the Ouija board is so much more global than I even realized that it was, that we can also use occult-related tools, specifically the Ouija board, as a parapsychological tool to communicate with the self. So you can look at it as a form of communication to have a conversation with something outer, with something outside, for example, a ghost or a spirit or an entity. Or you can use it as a tool to have a talk with yourself, with your subconscious. So it's basically like you are putting yourself in a trance state or in a dream state, but while you are still awake, and you are asking the board to communicate something to you and through you and with you. And that's why I've been having so much more fun applying and utilizing the Ouija board and telling people about it along the way. I'm discovering so much more about it, and that the Ouija board is so much more of a relevant tool than I ever thought it was. So I'm super excited about teaching my class at the end of March, again, at the Oregon Ghost Conference. It's going to be along the beach in Oregon, this gorgeous little touristy town called Seaside. It's going to be a 2-hour class. So the first hour is lecture, where we talk about the history and the development of the Ouija board. And then we talk about the misconceptions of the Ouija board found in the media and mainstream culture. And then we talk about using the boards as tools and how they work as tools and how to apply that and how to utilize that. And then the second half of the class, I give a live demonstration, and then it's all hands-on, and people bring their own boards, and we supply boards for people that they don't have any. And we get to work on the board. We do board work, and it's fabulous.
First, I want to say I'm really thrilled that you are in this field and doing the work that you're doing. And I'm really excited to have this chance to speak with you about it. And I'm hoping that as time goes on, that, you know, at some point in the future, we can reconnect and talk about some of your new work that you're going to be coming out with.
I would love that so much. I would be so honored. I really appreciate that. And your show is a big deal. So both you, Greg, and Rudolph, you guys are doing good work. So Thank you for doing what you do. You matter, and you not only help people like me get the word out, but you guys being involved in what you do, you are also helping to further the field of occultism. And occultism is so relevant, and it's important, and it's beautiful, and people need to learn more about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. We've kind of gone over your upcoming events. If you just maybe could remind people where they can find you online, that would be good.
I'm on Facebook, of course. My name is Katie Montana Jordan. Just look up the search engine on Facebook. I'm on Twitter a lot, actually, more than Facebook. And my Twitter handle is @KMontanaJordan. And I can also be found through Paranormal Research and Investigations, our website, as well as Scottish Ghost Adventures, our website there. And then again, with the Oregon Ghost Conference that we have coming up here in March, all of those details are being finalized right now. So all of that information is underway. And I also have, I'm not quite sure when it's going to happen, hopefully within the next couple of months here before the Oregon Ghost Conference, I'm finally going to have my own personal website up and running. And that's going to be
great.
Yeah, I know. I should have done it 100 years ago, but that's going to be katiemontanajordan.com. And that's going to be a one-stop shop where I'll have all my links to all of my writing and my published pieces and upcoming lectures and radio spots and everything that I do that's, you know, obviously also paranormally related. So I'm very excited about that. So, you know, I'll be blasting that information all over my social media when that happens. But 2016 has been a lot of fun. It's been challenging, and that's what I love about my line of work, that there's always so much more to learn. There's always so much more going on around. I love being challenged, and I love being forced to learn, and I love having to question everything and to have to question myself. I love that I'm in a line of work where every day I have to work a little bit harder, that there isn't just one answer, that there isn't just one route. So it's about constantly challenging yourself and constantly being forced to find your better self. And that's what I think paganism and occultism means for me. And I'm very honored to have the capability and the privilege to be in my line of work and to talk to people about it.
Well, thank you, Katie Montana Jordan. It's really been a pleasure and an honor to speak with you this evening. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. You guys are the best, and I can't wait to come back and visit with you again sometime soon.
For sure.
Thank you.
In the Occult of Personality membership section, Rudolph and I continue the interview with Katie Montana Jordan, focusing on her unique approach to the paranormal from a spiritual perspective. Don't miss that excellent recording. Just go to occultofpersonality.net/membership and sign up if you haven't already. It's the best way to support the podcast while receiving access to a tremendous amount of additional exclusive content. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.
Back over just to be with you, to be with you, my dear. But you'll never know I'm here. A ghost can be a memory you can't let go. Like a love that you've been waiting for that never shows. A ghost can be the memory of your one true love, the one true love you found. It's buried underground. You feel the spirit stirring as you head out for a drive, to open up your heart and ease the sorrow on your mind. Just keep your headlights focused on the double yellow lines as you're driving down the highway. With a ghost by your side. Whoa. I wish I could talk to you now and tell you that everything's gonna be fine. All I can do is whisper to you goodbye. From a ghost by your side. Driving down the highway with a ghost by your side.